Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. Always great joining you at the end of the week. Play that game of catch-up. Today is a particularly auspicious day. Today is June 6th, 2014, the 70th anniversary. Unbelievable. 70th anniversary of D-Day. Of course, that momentous day when the U.S. military, accompanied by its allies, stemmed the tide against Nazi Germany and began what was the beginning of the end for the Third Reich and the beginning of freedom throughout Europe and security for the rest of the world. And you look at those films, you look at the coverage, the movies, the sacrifices, the gallantry, the amazing Americans, the amazing soldiers, all of our allies who made those sacrifices, who showed tremendous valor, courage, moral compass. I don't even know what words to use to describe what they did. As was pointed out just a short while ago on a Fox News program, those men who stormed the beaches at Normandy really believed they were on a suicide mission, had no expectation of surviving the day. And here we are 70 years later, and I can't imagine having a more appropriate guest on my program. I expect him to join me in just a couple of minutes. Retired Major General Paul Vallely, U.S. Army, amazing American, amazing insight. He had been a Fox News analyst on military matters for a bunch of years. I am honored to consider Paul a friend. Honored that he will be hopefully able to spend at least a couple of minutes with us today. I know that he's off to some dinner engagements this evening, but he did promise to stop by at least telephonically and discuss with us this exchange of that American soldier for those terrorists. I really want to get his perspective on it. I know my thoughts. I know I'm greatly concerned that we are turning loose, or we have turned loose, a bunch of very dangerous individuals. These guys weren't just soldiers as terrorists. They were the leaders. They were the masterminds. And one of the thoughts that I have is that even if they're not directly on the battlefield, and God only knows they probably one way or another will wind up on that battlefield again, which concerns me, should concern all of us greatly, I'm also very much concerned that they could be calling the shots, literally and figuratively, from wherever they are, because I am certain that they will have the ability to communicate. But in any event, I see that General Vallely is on the line, I believe.
I am, Michael.
General Vallely, how are you? Happy Friday.
Well, thank you.
I just want to do a quick intro and get that out of the way. Give me 30 seconds for housekeeping. I know your time is precious, and my ability to get you on the program is precious to me as well, General.
That's fine.
Is the Michael Cutler Hour. I'm just going to announce two websites I want you guys to go to. We'll get into more about those websites and other issues, but it's michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org. This program, for those of you new to it, is about providing my perspectives on immigration, among other issues, but immigration principally, especially how it impacts national security and public health. But in speaking of national security, I would say that America's preeminent expert on all matters military, where our national security is concerned, has agreed to join us this evening. So with that introduction, Paul Vallely, welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. Thank you so much for taking out time from a busy schedule to join us.
My pleasure, Michael.
You know, you and I spoke earlier today, and I am having a conniption. I'm not sure how you can go to a doctor and describe the symptoms. It's kind of like pornography. It's hard to describe, but you know when you've seen it. That's kind of how I feel about having a conniption over this release of those terrorists. But rather than clutter the program with my thoughts, I want your thoughts. And by the way, before we do anything else, I really feel compelled to once again thank you for your service to America. Thank you for your family's sacrifices, your son in particular, this being, of course, the 70th anniversary of D-Day. So I want everyone just to take a moment out and give thoughts. If you say a prayer, if you have thoughts, however it is, you do your thing, folks. The men and women of the armed services, we owe them everything. And, you know, the backdrop with the VA hospitals and everything else, which sickens me. But I just would be remiss if I didn't at least make note of today being the 70th anniversary. So, again, as I always like to thank you so much for all of your sacrifices and all of your duty to our country.
Well, before we talk about Bergdahl and the Afghan situation and the five individuals from Gitmo, I'd like to go back and remember my connections with D-Day. I was born in 1939, and I went into West Point in 1957. But, Michael, almost all my instructors and tactical officers as a cadet and young officer had served in World War II primarily, some from Korea. And they were the battalion commanders, the brigade commanders, and the generals I was an aide for. I was a West Point class of 39 that went in and made full colonel in 1944. My father-in-law parachuted into Normandy with 101st Airborne. My first assignment in Europe was with the 505th, known in World War II, Parachute Regiment, and I served 3 years with the legacy of the 505th Airborne Battle Group.
Wow.
So when I look back at all my ties back to those great soldiers and what wonderful generals overall and admirals we had, Patton, MacArthur, Bradley, Admiral Nimitz, these were fine soldiers and leaders with wisdom, but with destinies that would bring us to a victory. And today I see we're sorely lacking in that kind of stature. And I wish we had more generals and admirals that would stand up for what's happening in America right now. They don't seem to be. They seem to be two more composed in an ideology of political correctness and one of not seeking victory when we go to war.
How is that possible? I mean, I know that, that you're probably dealing with a lot of sycophants, people who go along to get along. But, you know, I remember one of my buddies who happens to be an ICE agent and who also is in the military. I believe he's attained the rank of major. And he said that when he was out there with Schwarzkopf in Desert Storm, and I think Schwarzkopf, and I think you're probably going to agree with me, but you're in a far better position to make that call. I think he was a general, in your defining of what a good leader is, talked about how the young men and women placed under the command of the officers were the most precious and valuable resource of America. I mean, don't the current crop of leaders in the military, so-called, realize the value of those young men and women under their command?
Well, I think they do, but they have far too much looking at their careers, their next promotions, perhaps going into the defense industry, not having a strategy to win wars very early. As Sun Tzu, the famous Chinese strategist, said, prolonged warfare does not benefit anyone. And the fact that we're in Iraq for all of those years, now in Afghanistan, sacrificing the life and limb of a lot of men and women, and financial resources with no victory for America. And if you look back, we've had no victory since World War II. It was a stalemate in Korea with no victory because they didn't listen to MacArthur. We had no victory in Vietnam. We had no victory in Iraq. We've had no victory in Afghanistan. And when I see the sacrifice of our soldiers out there because our leaders, and particularly the naivety and lack of understanding of the political appointees and the political leaders, many of them have never served in the military. It's an absolute embarrassment when we've been at war over 12 years now in Afghanistan, and we'll be pulling out of there, and it'll be a sacrifice for naught for all these men and women. And that really aggravates me.
Well, it should aggravate every American. But do you think that, this is looking back, and God only knows, 20/20 hindsight, do you think it was an error to get involved in those two wars in the first place?
Absolutely it was. When I go back and I look, and I was in Baghdad in August of 2003, several months after Saddam had fallen, I think it was April 2003, Iraq was on their derriere. Iraq was no threat to the American people. Yes, they did have WMD. They had biological and chemical weapons, which we validated, verified, and that was assisted on moving them out of Iraq by the Russians. But when you look at a country, they were no threat. Now, the threat was in Afghanistan in the fall of 2001, but with 100 special operators and paramilitary, CIA, and air power, basically in 34 days, we pounced on the Taliban and al-Qaeda and crushed them and moved them. Basically, they moved what was left out of the country into the Waziristan area. And then, as I watched and I covered all of the war for Fox News, we go in and start fighting these wars conventionally. This has always been an unconventional war. And
right.
I was warned very early on, do not put bases in the Middle East. Hit them from the outside if there's a threat. That's exactly what we did with special operators inside, giving us intelligence and bringing in the air power to defeat them. But we developed this irrational counterinsurgency strategy that's never worked, and trying to win the hearts and minds of the people. That's not the job of our military. The military is to go in, defeat the enemy, and return home. This mythological nation building that we see throughout Afghanistan and Iraq, that's not the job of our soldiers to nation build. You defeat the enemy, and then other entities can come in and have that nation rebuild. MacArthur had the right approach in Japan. We're returned over the Japanese to build up, pull themselves up by their own accord, reestablish. We did the same thing basically in Germany, where we provided some security forces, but we let those people build their nation back themselves with some assistance.
So why are we not going back to what seemed to be a winning? So why aren't we using what seemed to have been a winning formula? Why do we change the rules, even though we keep seeing time and again that this new approach is an abysmal failure?
Well, I'll go back again. We don't have the leaders, and haven't had the leaders since World War II, of the Patton, of the MacArthurs, of the Nimitz, Bradleys, Marshalls, that had the acumen and had the courage of great commanders. And we have not had that since General Schwarzkopf. He was a 3-star. I was a 2-star. I worked carefully with him. Very closely with him when he was with the I Corps out of Fort Lewis, Washington. Now, he was a great commander. But since that, basically, since Clinton's time, the senior officers have become very, very political.
Let me ask you a quick question.
But I blame a lot of it on the political leaders.
Let me ask you a fast question about that. Is it possible that this is driven by the various corporations that stand to make gazillions of dollars by going in and nation build?
Well, that's part of it. There's big contracts involved in war. We all know that. Have seen a lot of the services go into consultants and the consulting companies that we saw in all the way back to Vietnam. So that's been a part of going to war and shifting the policy to a lot of the subcontractors and contractors to go in and provide services. But there again, that's conventional. This has never been a conventional war against radical Islam.
Right.
You're not fighting a country. We should not be fighting them with tanks and all this equipment. We go in, find a target, take it out, and come back to home base. It's, again, based on the lily pad strategy that I developed over 8 years ago and try to present to the Defense Department. Find the target, fix the target, and take the target out.
How would you define the lily pad strategy for the average layman?
Well, lily pads basically are like a pond out there, the world. Our aircraft carrier groups, for example, are lily pads. We have lily pads in Italy, Greece, Turkey, Europe, in the Far East, Okinawa. We can launch anywhere, anytime, 24 hours a day without going into countries that are insecure and do not provide security to our forces, such as we saw in Iraq and any of the countries in the Middle East. So you get good intelligence, find out where the enemy that's a threat to the United States or its assets, go in and take that target out and come back to home base.
Relying almost entirely by air, on air power then, I guess, and drones and that sort of thing.
Air, sea power, use of helicopters from the outside,
right,
to take in our special operations forces. You have rescue missions, you have raids,
okay,
but you hit that target and you're back out. You're not working out of any fixed base.
You don't have a continuing
That's
presence
correct.
In that area.
That's correct. You don't have
so you're
big hopscotching
base
developments.
Around.
And so you hit them from your lily pads, and then you come back to the lily pads.
And that way there's no target for them to retaliate against either.
That's right. And our we don't have bases that we have to worry about sending out patrols and having jihadis using IEDs to blow up our forces that are out on patrol. Those are conventional tactics, and as I said before, and I've said it since early 2000s, this is not a conventional war we're fighting. You have to fight it unconventionally.
It's an interesting approach. I think it makes perfect sense. But it seems lately common sense is one thing that's in very short supply, especially among our supposed leaders. Would you argue with that?
Well, there is no common sense, and they're amateurs. But they're making the decisions, and our senior officers are falling in line with it rather than standing up and saying, no, this is not the way to fight this war. But
well,
then,
you know, I remember when I was a
you...
kid. No, I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you. You paused. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry, Paul. I don't want to step
no,
on you at all.
Again, it goes back to your question about the military-industrial complex that President and General Eisenhower warned us about.
Yeah.
And it's very strong. All these big programs and all these expensive things that we don't need to fight a war today. We need to be lean and mean, be able to react within 24 hours, anywhere, anytime, have the aircraft, have the ships, have the forces as part of the inventory, and that's how you budget for that. And that's what we call a future strategy for America. And I'm going to put out more and more information on this, Michael, on TV, radio, and a lot of the articles I'll be writing.
Well, I can't wait to read it. You know, your perspectives are amazing. They're refreshing. We keep getting the same old, and I know Einstein and others have defined insanity as doing the same things the same way and expecting a different outcome. We've been doing the same things the same way, as you're pointing out, since the Second World War, always met with failure, always met with
yes.
large losses for America and Americans.
Yes,
and we keep doing it. We keep following a failed model, which makes no sense.
Makes no sense at all.
How do we change the how do we have this paradigm shift? So paradigm shift.
America has got to be very careful who they elect into office, whether it be into the White House or into the Senate or Congress, and we have to put good leaders in there. Warriors that understand the world as it is. When I visited General El-Sisi in Egypt just about 6 weeks ago, you know, he said, we have had to deal with realities. And he said, I wish America would look through our eyes, but he seems America always looks through its own eyes and never really understands the world the way it is in realities. And that's why we keep making grave mistakes, and Obama probably has made more mistakes than any president that I know other than Jimmy Carter.
Well, I would put him worse than Jimmy Carter, though. I don't know. We could have
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah, no, he is
thing.
Worse. I'm just saying
yep.
Jimmy Carter was totally inept, but this
yep.
guy here is a community organizer, has no idea what to do, and that's why in selecting the people he has working for him, they're inept. They don't know what they're doing. That's why you see all these mistakes. Each week there's some other scandal or something going on, whether it's Fast and Furious, whether it's Benghazi, the IRS.
Obamacare.
We're probably, just go down the line of all the events that have happened, and there's going to be more. That's
and
why
no
we
successes.
Need something.
But there isn't
no
even a success. No.
And that's why we need a non-confidence vote in Congress and force the resignation of Obama and his people. We need a new leadership team in Washington and a new forward strategy to save this country. That's how serious it is.
No, I agree with you completely. And then you look at the border situation where the illegal aliens are swarming across that border, totally creating, wreaking havoc on what was left of any semblance of a system. I mean, it's bedlam. And that, now they're releasing criminals from prisons. You know, our borders, and I think as a commander in the military, you would agree, our borders or any country's borders are its first and last line of defense. We don't have a border. How can you defend a country without a border?
Well, Michael, and you've made some good points over the last year. Not only are the borders are the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans and Mexico
right.
to our south and Canada to our north,
but the international airports.
Are our international airports.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
even our national airports. And also the sea lanes, the seaports, the sea lanes that go into our country. So these are all borders today, and we have to understand that.
And if you look at the heroin, and I know that the Taliban has been making huge amounts of money off the heroin sale, especially into England, but I'm sure some of that money from the United States is trickling back to them as well. And we now have a heroin epidemic across the country, so bad that, and by the way, New York State, according to the DEA, topped the list of states where heroin has been seized. Last year, 35% of all heroin seizures by DEA was in New York State. This isn't just about the Mexican border. Thinking about D-Day, that's kind of like the Calais deception. Although the Calais deception was a fantasy, the Mexican border is no fantasy. But certainly it's a distraction if you're not going to look at all of the other systemic failures. But I know you're short on time, and I want you to get to your dinner. I'm looking at the clock, and I do want to touch on the release of those terrorists in exchange for that one kid who increasingly looks like a defector or something. I don't know what to make of him. I'm not sure anybody knows what to make of him. He's being held incommunicado thus far by our own government. What do you make of that whole circus?
Well, number one, he is a deserter. That's been verified by his platoon members
right.
in Afghanistan. He became a sympathizer. I think his family is they're Taliban sympathizers. I think now our president is a Muslim radical. I wouldn't say Muslim, radical Islamist sympathizer. He's been supporting, and the administration has been supporting, the Muslim Brotherhood, not only in Benghazi, the situation there, where we basically were involved in an arms deal to arm the Al-Qaeda and the takedown of Gaddafi. We then supported the Muslim Brotherhood. I say we, our government, in Egypt. We also were supporting Al-Qaeda Muslim Brotherhood elements in Syria. And so, again, I speak from being over in Egypt, and Egypt can't understand it. They've now outlawed the Muslim Brotherhood.
Right.
Saudi Arabia has outlawed the Muslim Brotherhood. But yet we have Qatar, that supports Al-Qaeda and Muslim Brotherhood, and basically are being even shut down by their neighbors in the Middle East, such as Saudi Arabia. So they cannot understand why the President of the United States would be supporting radical Islamic elements. And so in the final line here drawn, he basically is going to give away Afghanistan back to the Taliban. That's going to happen.
Can you see any reasons for doing this? Do you see any advantage for America in doing that?
Not for America, but for Obama and his ideology and his people. They really are intent on weakening the United States, which they're doing day by day. And you're up against a Putin who plays hardball against an Obama who plays wiffle ball.
Yeah.
And so that's why we're losing all around. We have no friends overseas anymore. They love the American people, by the way. But they cannot understand how our government has gone so far downhill and no longer a superpower that can set the example for the world.
Is there any justification, any rational? I mean, what destination does this guy have for the good ship Lollipop? I mean, where are we headed if Obama gets his way, do you think? I mean, I know I'm asking you a lot to try to analyze some other person. But, I mean, I keep looking at this, and I keep scratching my head and saying, this doesn't make any sense. Can you make any sense?
Progressive socialism. Yes, progressive socialism. That's what he's driving towards. The Affordable Health Care Act, as I call it.
Yeah.
The cover-ups and the scandals within the administration. The ineptness of all of the people. Joe Shinseki at the VA, who I know. All of these people are operating it with such ineptness and no common sense, with no vision of making and turning around what the ills are in our country. I've known for a long time about the ills and the situation in the Veterans Administration, and they can't seem to rectify and correct anything. Now, these are intelligent people. Are they just doing it because they're inept, or is there an ideology behind it?
Well, I you have to guess that depending on the individual, it could be A, B, or both.
It's both.
Because I don't think anybody could be that stupid without being smart, if that makes any sense to you, what I'm trying to say.
Michael, the only thing holding America together now is our private sector and our local communities. Our companies working every day, that's what keeping America together. But when we did a study at Stand Up America, we found that 47% of the U.S. government could be done away with, and we wouldn't even miss it.
Wow.
As we return more things to the states.
So that's your the Stand Up America website. Yeah. Why don't you put that out there for my listeners?
It's standupamericaus.org, standupamericaus.org. We post that every morning. We have 12 analysts that work for us, and they do a very good job of trying to put out information first before anybody else does in the morning. So you can look at our site. We have probably 25 affiliated organizations around the world and in this and in the United States that we work with, particularly in the Middle East. And we work with a lot of different organizations in our own country. As you know, I was one of the co-founders of the Citizens Commission on Benghazi. And
correct.
If it wasn't for us, we wouldn't see this select committee now being formed and chaired by Trey Gowdy, which we also recommended. So, well, anyhow, Michael, I've got to go, but I appreciate the time and appreciate always being on your program.
Well, and I appreciate your willingness to come on. You have a perspective that is, you know, unsurpassed by anybody in this country. I wish we could get the fools on the Hill to listen to you, General Vallely. But I certainly want you to know that I listen to you, and I know my listeners do. I look forward to having you back on again. I look forward to working with you. And, I just want to thank you for all of your dedicated efforts for America, both when you were in the military and since leaving the military. You're still a tremendous asset for this country.
Well, thank you, and I would encourage all your listeners, join Stand Up America. Go on our website. Help us out. Help our people out who are working very hard to change the company around. Become a member. Give a donation, whatever it may be, and join us. We need all of you to help us place this country in a position to go forward now and not go over the cliff.
Well, sounds like sage advice. And once again, the website is standupamerica.us. Is that correct?
No. No, standupamericaus.org.
Okay, gotcha. Paul, thank you so much. Have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy your dinner, by the way.
Thank you, Michael.
Be well. We'll
Bye-bye.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Well, that was General Vallely. Always a pleasure to have him join us. For his insight, amazing insight. And so here we find ourselves. You know, it's Friday. You look back at the past week. And every time I believe that we've seen something that's unbelievable, this administration appears to have the capacity to hammer us even further into the ground. And I'm not being partisan. Paul Vallely is a political conservative. I'm a lifelong Democrat. And, you know, this isn't about left or right, folks. It's about right or wrong. And what's really disturbing to me is that both political parties are failing abysmally in their obligations to do what's necessary to secure America and Americans. And, you know, I'm working on a couple of articles. In fact, next week on Tuesday, I'm going to be on the Roger Hedgecock television program. This past week, I was on the American One Network, and I was on the Blaze TV, trying to get people across the country to understand the true importance of immigration, the true importance of our borders. Interestingly, I was looking at a quote from Rahm Emanuel, you know, one of the inner circle of President Obama. Of course, now he's the mayor of Chicago, and we all know about the Chicago way. And here's a quote. This is from Rahm Emanuel. "You never let a serious crisis go to waste. And what I mean by that is that it's an opportunity to do that which you did not think, I'm sorry, to do, let me get this right here. When computers work properly, they're wonderful, and when they don't, you want to pull the hair out of your head." Let me read this again. This is from Rahm Emanuel. "You never let a serious crisis go to waste, and what I mean by that, it's an opportunity to do things you think you could not do before." Now, that's what Emanuel said, Rahm Emanuel. So I want you to think about that, opportunity to do the things you think you could not do before. The president, when he came to office, Obama, said, you know, well, we're going to take care of immigration and all this other business. And then he decided that he didn't need the legislative process, didn't need the legislative process. He essentially enacted the DREAM Act without the benefit of legislation. Now, here's what's remarkable, and maybe some of you haven't thought about this, because the Republicans are screaming bloody murder. Oh, my God, the president is taking authority he doesn't have, and he's violating the Constitution. Well, let me tell you, every single day, unknown tens of thousands of illegal aliens are entering the United States every day. Every day this is happening. And yet, no one does anything to stop it, but we hear a lot of complaining about it. Now, let's remember something. Many Republicans want to see that great wave of humanity crash on our shore because there are many people making tons of money off of this. Always follow the money, okay? This isn't about being conservative or liberal. It's about being pro-American or not. It's not about left or right, but about right or wrong. Think about that. The Republicans say, well, we're not going to give those people citizenship. Of course not, because now they can make that fatuous nonsense claim, well, this isn't an amnesty. We're not going to make them citizens. Well, at least two-thirds of them don't want citizenship. They just want a card that allows them to work, allows them to move freely around the country and across our borders, bring in family members, and send money home. Well, the Republicans are willing to do that. So they're playing this little game so they can go before the microphones and say, oh, no, our plan isn't like the Democrat plan because we're not going to give these folks citizenship. We'll just give them permission to work. And the Republicans have another ulterior motive because they figure, well, these people are likely to vote for the Democratic candidate if we gave them citizenship. So we don't want to give them citizenship, but we want them to be able to work because then we can drive down the wages. There comes a point of diminishing returns. When you destroy America's middle class, you destroy the biggest consumer base the world has ever known. The American dream was linked to that big consumer base. It was always the Americans driving the big cars. You think about Europe in the 50s and 60s. They're driving around in those little Renault Dauphines, and they're driving around in little Volkswagens, you know, with a little four-cylinder, horizontally opposed, air-cooled engines putting along. And the Americans are zipping by on the highway on their big V8s, and, you know, every year they would brag about more horsepower and more torque and bigger engines and faster and heavier and more chrome. And then the times changed a little bit and things got a little bit different. But always think about how America was always perceived in the world. Conspicuous consumption, the color TVs, three cars in the driveway, and the Europeans with the little narrow winding streets with these little cars. In Paris, they had this thing called the deux chevaux, which means two horses. And it's not that there were two horses pulling the car, probably had two horsepower. And these were very flimsy, light cars. So Americans were known for pumping lots of money into big cars because that was the part of the American dream, to be this big consumer and buy the big house and all that. It's going away. The middle class is on the endangered species list, not only in this country, but around the world. And the wealthy are very narrowly focused. And what they're focused on is how do we drive down the cost of labor so we can maximize our profits. And they keep on doing that, and eventually you wind up destroying the middle class. But they don't care, because right now all that they see is that the middle class is making too much money. And in fact, that's exactly the point that Alan Greenspan made when he testified before Chuck Schumer. I mean, it was one of those moments when you look at what he said, and you say to yourself, boy, now there's a guy that had chutzpah to actually say this, but you know what's so incredible? The news didn't cover it, and nobody seemed to care. And so does it really matter if Alan Greenspan makes these statements if Americans don't react to it? And he has made similar statements, standing shoulder to shoulder with the likes of Bill Gates and Zuckerberg, and talks about the privileged elite to describe American middle-class workers. And in fact, on April 30th, 2009, and those of you who have listened to my program know I've spoken about this before, but I want to keep reminding you about this because I want you to understand that there is this willful intention by the greediest bunch of bums you've ever seen who are trying to drive this train off the track. There's something called the tragedy of the commons, and I'll be speaking and writing about more of that in the weeks ahead. And it's funny because it's one of these things that to some of my intellectual friends was like common knowledge. I was on the phone with my friend over at the Social Contract earlier today, and I write for them. I have an article in their current edition. And I said, Wayne, are you familiar with the tragedy of the commons? And he told me, oh, yes, I know the man who came up with the idea. And that term, that phrase, was actually featured on Through the Wormhole with Morgan Freeman. And it was about whether or not poverty is genetic or not, you know, whether you're born into poverty, how people wind up poor. And there was this philosopher who turned around and said that the tragedy of the commons is that imagine a common area where shepherds could come and have their sheep graze. And as long as you brought just a couple of sheep and they grazed in this common area that everybody shared, everything would be fine. There'd be enough grass, would grow healthy, and then everybody could make a profit off of their flock, and things are fine. But there's always going to be some guy that comes along or some gal who comes along and says, hey, free food? What do you mean I should only bring a half dozen sheep? I'm going to bring 100 sheep. And they do. And suddenly they throw this beautiful system that was in perfect balance and in perfect harmony, they throw it into turmoil. Because now the land can't support all the sheep. And lots of people are now paying that price because they can't feed their sheep. And so it goes. It's the idea that if everyone is reasonable and everybody takes a little bit out of the pot and puts back a little bit into the pot, everything circulates and everything is fine. That's like the average American who goes to work, pays his or her bills, goes to the movies, buys a new car every 8 or 9 years, goes on a little vacation, buys a nice new suit of clothing, and everyone's happy until somebody comes along, like in the game Monopoly, and says, I'm going to get everything for me. You know, I compare the very greedy, with a malignant tumor. You know, cancer has an insatiable appetite for nutrients. In fact, malignancies tend to secrete hormones so that the body will grow blood vessels so that the tumor can literally bathe itself in nutrients. And it really works well, but what happens is that the healthy tissue starts to starve off, and the cancer grows bigger, just like the bank accounts of the super wealthy keep growing bigger. And eventually it starts to strangle everybody else, just like the healthy person becoming ill. But what the cancer, which is mindless, doesn't understand is that ultimately when it kills off the host that it lives in, its fate is sealed also. The people that are super wealthy that are going to wring every nickel out of our economy and dump it into their own little bank accounts, their own little fat piggy banks, are risking the destruction of our way of life, of this country. And in the turmoil that would follow, they may not do well at all either. But that's what they do. They want to bathe themselves in wealth. And they do it to the exclusion of the people around them. They are the ultimate greedy SOBs. Instead of saying, I have to give back, they have to be able to figure out more ways of bringing more in. And they find ways of making some charitable contributions so it looks like all's well in the world. But believe me, all's not well. And you look at the news reports. I mean, it's a joke. 6.2%, 6.3% unemployment. Doesn't sound so bad until you find out that we're not including about 100 million American workers who don't have work. And in fact, they've given up looking for work, so they don't get counted anymore. Well, how in the world can you talk about an unemployment rate that ignores a third of the population of the United States of America and say to people, oh, that statistic is meaningful? Beyond belief. I'm going to read this, then I want to tell you a little bit about California and some population stabilization, because they do an amazing job, and as California goes, so goes the rest of the country. But let me read, and I've read a little bit from Greenspan's statement in the past. I want to read a little bit more of it today, because I really want you to hear this. Because, you know, if there's a news story that the news doesn't report on, nobody knows about it. You know, if a tree falls in the forest, it's not a question of whether it makes a sound. It's a question of whether anybody even knows that the tree fell. So I'm going to tell you that the tree fell in the forest. And the tree has a name, and it's Alan Greenspan. And what fell were the words out of his mouth. Now, this is an excerpt from his testimony, April 30th, 2009. And by the way, you can go to capsweb.org. You can go to michaelcutler.net. You can actually read his testimony. You can watch a video of him making the statement. Truly astonishing. And, you know, I was on a radio show the day after the hearing. I was so damn angry. The young lady whose program I was on said, well, what did you think of Greenspan when you watched him make that statement? I said, well, I was so angry, I had the sense I was witnessing a first. She said, what kind of first? I said, well, it was the first time they let somebody testify who was suffering from rigor mortis. I really don't like Mr. Greenspan, not in the least, not even a teeny tiny bit. Here's what he says. There are two distinctly different policy issues that confront the Congress. The first is illegal immigration. The notion of rewarding with permanent resident status those who have broken our immigration laws does not sit well with the American people. In a recent poll, two-thirds would like to see the number of illegals decreased. But there is little doubt that unauthorized, that is to say, illegal immigration has made a significant contribution to the growth of our economy. Now stop and think about that. Here's Alan Greenspan saying, yeah, the American people, two-thirds of the American people don't like what's going on. But the hell with them is basically what he's saying. We're to thumb our nose at those Americans because this is good for the economy. Now, whose economy? The American economy? Not really. Corporate economy, really. And then he says between 2000 and 2007, for example, unauthorized immigration, right? That's what we're talking about, accounted for more than a sixth of the increase in our total civilian labor force. So look at how much of the labor force is now illegally present in the country. Well, if there's a shortage of jobs, which is what unemployment means, what does that tell you? It tells you that American jobs are being lost by Americans and being taken by individuals from other countries who shouldn't even be here. Now, why do you think the employers are laying off Americans? The Americans aren't lazy. They're not waking up and saying, I don't feel like working anymore. No. The Americans are being told, you're fired because the employer knew that they could get away with hiring illegal aliens, not pay the fringe benefits, pay them off the books, not have to pay into all those programs like the tax programs and workman's compensation and all those other things. No. This is off the books. And so it goes. So understand, this is about doing damage to the American economy, doing damage to America's middle-class workers and their families, and America's working poor. But Greenspan loves it because his cronies have never made more money. Think of the tragedy of the commons, okay? And then he says the illegal part of the civilian labor force diminished last year as the economy slowed, though illegal still comprised an estimated 5% of our total civilian labor force. 5%. Now, think of how many people are working. 5% of the labor force are illegal aliens, and that's before we deal with the legal aliens who are coming here and taking jobs that they're entitled to take, but maybe lied on their applications and committed fraud. So you understand why Americans are finding it increasingly difficult to find work and to remain in the middle class. This is done willfully. This is engineered, folks. And then he says, unauthorized immigrants serve as a flexible component for our workforce, often a safety valve, and he goes on, extolling the virtues of hiring people who run our borders. And then he says, and this you've heard me talk about before. This is Greenspan. Our skilled labor shortage, I trust, will ultimately be resolved through reform of our primary and secondary education systems. But at best, that will take many years. This is, again, the lie that, oh, we just don't have enough engineers and technicians. It's utter lies. It's utter fabrication. I've written articles for capsweb.org, as have others. There's articles all over the Internet talking about how this is an absolute bald-faced lie, that in fact the unemployment rate for IT workers, American IT workers, and other high-tech workers is more than double what it is for the rest of the labor force. But they've got to tell the lie so that people accept the premise that what are you going to do? We just don't have enough of these people here that can do the job. And it's a lie. So now here's the advantage, okay? And he said an accelerated influx, see, we want to bring in more highly skilled immigrants to bridge that gap that doesn't exist, and moreover, carry with it two significant benefits. First, skilled workers and their families form new households. They will of necessity move into vacant housing units, vacant housing unit, poetic way to describe an American home lost to foreclosure. Right? They will move into the vacant housing units, the current glut of which is depressing prices of American homes. And, of course, house price declines are a major factor in mortgage foreclosures and the plunge in value of the vast quantity of U.S. mortgage-backed securities that has contributed substantially to the disabling of our banking system. Really? What contributed substantially to the failure of the banking system were the subprime mortgages for illegal aliens whose real identities and hence their credit standing could not be verified. And by the way, it wasn't just mortgages, it was credit cards, non-secured loans. And then, and this is amazing, he says, Greenspan, the second bonus would address the increasing concentration of income in this country. Concentration of income. Someone's making too much damn money. I wonder who it is. Not Mr. Greenspan, not Mr. Gates, not Mr. Zuckerberg, not Mr. Bloomberg. Who are we talking about? Yes. And he says, greatly expanding our quotas for the highly skilled would lower wage premiums of the skilled over lesser skilled. Skill shortages in America exist because we are shielding our skilled labor force from world competition. Do you know, folks, that the immigration laws are supposed to shield American workers from foreign competition? Do you know that our immigration laws are supposed to shield Americans and America from international terrorists and transnational criminals? America's immigration laws are supposed to shield Americans from aliens with dangerous communicable diseases and convicted felons, okay, and fugitives from justice and spies and human rights violators. Those immigration laws are indeed a shield. Our borders, and as General Vallely noted, we talked about whether it's an international airport, a seaport, whether it's the northern, southern border, doesn't matter. If we can keep the bad guys out, if we can keep the personnel with the dangerous disease, whether it's measles, whether it's resistant tuberculosis, whatever, we're all healthier and safer. Polio, making a resurgence, a comeback. We thought we eradicated it. Wrong. Because people that run the border are not being inspected. Ellis Island was a quarantine station, folks. It was run by public health in conjunction with immigration. You would never know it. it wasn't a free-for-all like we have on the border now. But let me just finish this up, and we're going to get to that free-for-all on the border. Alan Greenspan said then, quotas have been substituted for the wage pricing mechanism and in the process created a privileged elite whose incomes are being supported at non-competitively high levels by immigration quotas on skilled professionals. Eliminating such restrictions would reduce at least some of our income inequality. So understand what he's saying. If we could let in lots more high-tech foreign workers, we could eliminate that wage premium. In other words, we could slash the salaries of middle-class workers, and by reducing that wage inequality, there'd be scant difference between America's poor and America's supposed middle class. That's the end game. That's the destination. You know, when you get on a bus, you look at the sign in the front of the bus, it tells you where the bus is going. This is where this bus is going. Poverty for all. Poverty for all. And people are just going about their business, blithely ignoring this, listening to the nonsense, and saying, oh, well, I guess it's someone else's problem. They do the work I'm not doing. Baloney. This is across the board. This is about driving down wages. This is about doing irreparable damage to America so that the greedy, tiny fraction, this oligarchy, and in fact, Princeton University and others have done studies and said, you know, we're not living in a republic any longer. We're living in an oligarchy. An oligarchy, of course, being a government where the wealthy call the shots. And if you look at the Supreme Court decisions about campaign finance, that's what we're dealing with, folks, an oligarchy, where Bill Gates does what he wants, where Zuckerberg does what he wants. These guys are getting the best government their money can buy. They are pumping between $1.5 and $2 billion into pushing for comprehensive reform. Do you think they care about farm workers? No. Because the Trojan horse measure in comprehensive reform is to double or triple the number of high-tech visas. And Ted Cruz, a conservative, see, this isn't about being conservative or liberal, it's about being pro-American. Ted Cruz is leading the charge. Ted Cruz, the senator from Texas, guess what? He wants a 500% increase in the number of H-1B visas. Why in the world would anybody go to school, put in that kind of time and money and effort to get an engineering degree or a computer degree, if you're then going to have to compete with hundreds of thousands of high-tech workers from India who will work for $40,000 a year? Who wants that to happen? Ted Cruz wants that to happen. Chuck Schumer wants that to happen. Nancy Pelosi, all of them want that to happen. Lindsey Graham, one of the Gang of Eight, South Carolina. Lindsey Graham, yes, indeedy, absolutely adamant about pushing comprehensive reform so we could drive down the wages of a middle-class workers and their families. Right now, 1 in 5 American children live below the poverty line, but we're not there yet. See, these folks won't be happy until 80% of Americans live below the poverty line, because think of all the more money that will then be pumped into their bank accounts, they believe, as wages drop and profits rise. Of course, I don't know who's going to buy the crap they're peddling once they destroy the middle class completely, but they can't see beyond that. They might be bright about computers. They're not very bright about what they're doing or how they're approaching it, and they certainly lack a moral compass. They certainly lack a moral compass. You know, there's always room for more oarsmen on a slave ship, and if, when you look at the Zuckerbergs of the world, if they could pop your eyes out of your head because they had somebody to sell your eyeballs to, I'd walk around with bulletproof goggles on for fear that they'd be looking to grab your eyeballs. Because that's what they're doing. They don't care the damage they do as long as it increases their profits. These are immoral individuals. You had Bloomberg holding a cocktail party at Ground Zero at the museum where there are thousands of human remains yet unidentified. It's a mausoleum. In a million years, I couldn't imagine holding a cocktail party in a cemetery. I mean, I don't even know what in the world is between Bloomberg's ears, you know, if there's a brain in there, if there's a heart in his chest. They don't care. I can do it because I am wealthy and powerful. That is how an oligarchy operates. I will get what I want. Might makes right, and my checkbook gives me all the might in the world. That's what we're looking at. Now let's turn to our southern border. And in fact, Caps had a wonderful article with a photograph leaked to the media of women and children being warehoused by the Border Patrol because they don't know what to do with them. I mean, people are pouring across our border. It looks like the subway station during the rush hour at Penn Station. And they're coming this way because the president keeps on saying, we're going to let you stay. In fact, they've just extended this DREAM Act, the legislation that required no legislation, for another 2 years. And where are the Republicans? Nowhere. They're not up there jumping up and down screaming. They're there like Denham from California saying, well, those DREAMers should be allowed in the military because if we put them into the military, then we can give them citizenship. My goodness gracious, do you really want to put illegal aliens into the military? There's an individual by the name of Ali Mohammed. If you go to the 9/11 Commission report, page 68, they talk about Mohammed. This guy was an Egyptian army officer, and he came to the United States legally, joined our military, became an instructor at Fort Bragg for Special Forces, and ultimately worked with al-Qaeda. He trained the people that bombed the World Trade Center in 93. You had the Fort Hood shooting. We trained Los Zetas. Los Zetas in Mexico were the elite military and law enforcement personnel of the Mexican government. What could possibly go wrong? Well, Los Zetas has become the most violent, most virulent, most pernicious of all the drug cartels in all of Mexico. Armed them. We trained them. We taught them our tactics and our playbook. What could go wrong? So our border is now a free-for-all. There's no integrity to the process. CAPS had this great article on the front page. You really need to go to capsweb.org. Look at the other articles. I'm one of many people who write for them routinely. I've got another article that's about to be posted about the damage being done to the middle class. I'm eager to see it. On the website, every day they put new articles up, so you have to kind of wait your turn when you write for them. But understand the dangers this imposes on us. We have everybody charging for the border. Now, the argument used to be, we can't deport people, we're going to split up families. So now you've got the children coming here, so we have family reunification inside the United States. You have to presume that the parents are here. If you want to unite the families and then send them home, we used to do that. But you see, one of the things that they wanted to do when they created ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and they don't even really call it by that name now, any kind of proactive investigation, few and far between as they are, is handled by HSI, Homeland Security Investigations, because they had to get the word immigration out of there, because God only knows they don't want anybody to even imagine that the Department of Homeland Surrender does anything about enforcing the immigration laws, because they barely do, you know. But this trend started with George W. I mean, in earnest, we had the amnesty of 86 with Reagan. It's both parties. But you had George W. saying, oh, let's create ICE. And most of the bosses at ICE came from customs. They have no background really in immigration. They're more concerned with people that produce counterfeit Gucci loafers and counterfeit passports. You know, the real question, and I've written articles for CAPS about this, you know, how and why do you explain, meaning the politicians, the advocates for comprehensive reform, the fact that this is a disaster for America. Why on earth would you do this? Why on earth, and this is the primary question you should be asking everybody politics who's running for Congress in the upcoming elections, if the primary hasn't been held especially. I mean, you look at Cantor, the man's a train wreck. I mean, goodness gracious. It's biblical to give illegal aliens citizenship by joining the military. I want to see that one in the Bible. I want to know what page that's on. So, you know, you look at the nonsense, but here's the question you should be asking these people. And by the way, when I do it, you see them sweat. You see them vibrate. They would rather tell you anything else except answer this question. Take out a pen and write it down. Why are you discussing immigration reform without first giving thought to the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission report? That's the question. Why on earth, I mean, we just saw this debacle with the NSA, and it's still ongoing, and we're still being told, oh, no, we have to do this because, you know, the terrorists, they only get it wrong once, and, you know, we can't get it, we have to get it right 100% of the time. And, you know, if we're wrong only one time, they can kill us. Okay. So I want you to know something. This is interesting. The 9/11 Commission issued a report. We all know about it. And they talked about immigration. They talked about Ali Muhammad. They talked about visa fraud and so forth. But the 9/11 Commission had a staff. The staff was comprised of immigration agents. It was comprised of attorneys. And they looked at the 9/11 Commission report when it was completed, and they said, you know, great report, but there's not enough in there about immigration. So they wrote their own report. This is the 9/11 Commission staff. They had access to all the same information that the 9/11 Commission had. And they came up with a report known as the 9/11 Commission Staff Report on Terrorist Travel, a monograph. And this report starts out with this preface. And by the way, if you don't know, I provided testimony to the 9/11 Commission. But here is the quote. And this comes very close, by the way, to something that I had given them. And this is the beginning of the preface of the report. So from the very first words, this sets the tone, tire 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. Here we go. It is perhaps obvious to state that terrorists cannot plan and carry out attacks in the United States if they are unable to enter the country. Yet prior to September 11, while there were efforts to enhance border security, no agency of the U.S. government thought of border security as a tool in the counterterrorism arsenal. Indeed, even after 19 hijackers demonstrated the relative ease of obtaining a U.S. visa gaining admission into the United States, border security still is not considered a cornerstone of national security policy. We believe, for reasons we discuss in the following pages, that it must be made one. Do you think we have border security when you see thousands of women and children charging our border? Really? Is that what passes for security? Where are the Republicans other than Jeff Sessions, other than Steve King, other than my friend Lou Barletta? Where are they? Where are the other members of Congress to be screaming and demanding explanations, demanding that this be remedied? The Border Patrol is now providing babysitting service. The Border Patrol is turned into concierge service for illegal aliens. You want to unite families? I'm with you. You got the mama bear. You got the baby bears. Let's find Papa Bear. Put them on the same airplane and send them home as a family unit. They don't have the legal right to be here. Either we have borders or we don't. And if we don't have borders, then we need to disband the military and we need to take down the American flag. You cannot have a viable country without a border. You can't defend the people of a country if you can't keep the enemy out. Today is D-Day. Think of the Allied forces storming the beaches. Once we got behind the enemy lines, once we got past the Nazi lines, we were able to defeat them. Our borders are no different. Of course, the situation is reversed. We're defending ourselves against people who are entering in violation of law, and not everybody coming here is looking to work illegally, and that's creating enough problems for us. And by the way, we admit more than 1 million lawful immigrants every year. It's more than the rest of the world combined. It's not as though we have a sealed-off country. It's funny, the president seems to be striving for isolationism, but not so much where it comes to people entering our country. And yet, look what happened with Mexico when our Marine wandered into Mexico with 3 guns that he was lawfully entitled to carry in his trunk, immediately told the Mexican officials, hey, I got on this road, I couldn't turn around, here I am, I just want to go back. He was at a port of entry going into Mexico because when he got on the highway, he missed the turnoff. And he told them up front, I got 3 guns in the car. I'm entitled to have them, but I don't want to be in Mexico. I just want to go back. And instead of saying, sure, turn around and go back, or at the worst, seizing his guns, they seized him. He has been behind bars in Mexico, shunted from one prison to another since March. The Mexicans take that border seriously, but only one way. One way. It's like a semi-permeable membrane for those of you who studied biology back in high school or college. You know, their people should have free access to America, but Americans, not so much. Not so much. So understand that it's impossible to defend a country with wide-open borders. There is no there's no way of defending. There's no way of defending that. But if you think it makes sense to give people identity documents And we hear these BS arguments, well, we can't deport 11 million. It's closer to 30 million, and God knows it'll be 40 million by next week at the rate that it's going. Do we stop every speeder? Do we grab every drunk driver? Do we grab every rapist or everybody that holds up a convenience store? Of course not. So law enforcement doesn't throw their hands in the air and go, well, we can't grab them all, so we're just going to ignore the law. Right? No. Law enforcement says we'll get as many as we can and convince people that we're so serious that people won't even try break the law. So that way we'll get the numbers down to a manageable level by offering deterrence, not encouragement. You see, the starter's pistol has been fired. And for aspiring illegal aliens around the world, ladies and gentlemen, the finish line is our border. Because once you get here, the Border Patrol can't wait to get their hands on you and escort you to wherever it is you want to go in the United States. If you don't think that's insanity, please check yourself into a room that has padded walls. But here is where the threat to national security becomes crystal clear in the 9/11 Commission report, 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. This is on page 47. I didn't write this. They did. Once terrorists had entered the United States, their next challenge was to find a way to remain here. Their primary method was immigration fraud. For example, Yusuf and Ajaj concocted bogus political asylum stories when they arrived in the United States. Political asylum. You know, I'm a big fan of it. I was a B'nai B'rith president back in college. My grandmother died in the Holocaust. I was named for her. My mom came here ahead of the Holocaust, thank God, because had she not made it here, she would probably have perished during the war. I wouldn't be born. My kids wouldn't be here. But there's got to be integrity to the system, and there is none. The Boston Marathon bombing last year, April 15th, the Tsarnaev family claimed credible fear. I can't go back to Russia because terrible things will happen. And as soon as we gave them legal status, they jumped on airplanes and went back to Russia. That should have been enough for somebody to open an investigation. But not in this government. Not in the Bush administration either. Oh, well, maybe they lied. Who cares? No big deal. They just probably want to mow lawns or blow up parades. So anyway, their primary method was immigration fraud. For example, Yusuf and Ajaj concocted bogus political asylum stories when they arrived in the United States. Mahmoud Abu Alima, involved in both the World Trade Center and landmark plots, received temporary residence under the Seasonal Agricultural Worker Program after falsely claiming that he picked beans in Florida. He lied. What a shocker. And by the way, these dreamers aren't being interviewed. By the way, nobody's going out and doing investigations. So if they lie, don't ask, don't tell, we don't care. Finally, page 98, 9/11 Commission staff report, terrorist travel. Terrorists in the 1990s, as well as the September 11th hijackers, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status like the Dreamers folks, or applying for asylum after entering. In many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack. Execute an attack. How much clearer could it be? And I have sat with members of Congress and said to them, looked them square in the eye, one-on-one meeting, why in the world, Mr. Chairman, in one case, are you not willing to look at the 9/11 Commission report? He was willing to discuss anything but answer that question. Four separate attempts in 30 minutes wouldn't go near that question. Wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. Didn't want to hear it. Kept coming back and saying, well, we can't deport 11 million. The American people don't have a stomach to deport 11 million. I said, first of all, no one's talking about rounding up 11 or 30 million. But why didn't anybody ask me? Last time I checked, I was an American people. But you're not answering my question. I said, because I would suggest to you that the American people have even less stomach for another 9/11. They have less stomach to watch Americans or anybody jumping off the top of a building because the building is on fire and there's no way down from inside the building. I think they have a far smaller stomach for that image than for removing people who violated our borders and our laws that are our first and last line of defense. Went into another topic. These people attend church with them. I said, we're not having a conversation about church. We're talking about our immigration laws. And now you've got Cantor talking about, incredibly, how it's biblical to allow illegal aliens to join our military. By the way, the law says that it's a felony for an illegal alien to be found in possession of a firearm or ammunition. Those laws are so pesky. Who needs laws when you have politicians that are taking so much money that they don't care about the law? They're constitutionalists until they get the check. Once they see the check, well, the Constitution's an important document, maybe sometimes a little bit, sort of. It's hard to talk to a politician when they have so much money shoved in their ears that it does a better job of keeping the sound of a voice out of their head than noise-canceling earphones. You really got to read this article at the CAPS website. You got to look at that photograph of all these people. I mean, this is a photograph that's disgusting. We are jamming people, treating them like cattle, and we're doing nothing to slow this down. And, of course, today in the middle of this crisis created by the administration, with intent, I believe, to create total anarchy in the immigration system. So, you know, it's like when there's a flood, they open the floodgates and all the water comes down so that the dam doesn't burst. And, of course, houses get washed away, people get washed away. But what could you do? All that water is pouring in. So now it's all that humanity is pouring in. We threw a party. We invited them. And we are shocked that they showed up? Really? And the average American sits home and says, gee whiz, what time is Dancing with the Stars going on today? Gee whiz, is that crazy actress running around naked again today? Gee whiz, who's at the Betty Ford Clinic today doing a rehab deal? Look, folks, this is about the survival of our country. As I started out discussing when General Vallely joined me at the beginning of my program, today is the anniversary of D-Day, 70 years ago. 70 years ago, the carnage at Normandy, the Americans and the Allies who lost their lives, lost their body parts. Some of them survived, but barely. Many of them never the same. Many of them were barely out of their teens, if they were out of their teens, when they stormed the beach and were hit by machine gun fire coming at them. What did they sacrifice for? I made a reference to General Vallely's son. His son was killed as a member of Special Forces just over 10 years ago. I mean, this is personal for him. As an American, it's personal for me, but I mean, Vallely and his family, they've made such an amazing sacrifice, such an unbelievable sacrifice. And I have to ask, what was that sacrifice for? What was it for? What was the purpose when we're giving it away? And I want you to think about two things. Imagine being on a highway like the New Jersey Turnpike, and I was just in Washington doing a speaking event down in D.C. Earlier this week. And when you get to the Jersey Turnpike and some of the other highways, you know, they have an easy pass lane and they have a cash lane. And then some of the highway roads now, it's really cool because they tell you just slow to 55 miles an hour. There's no real booth. You just go through and there's an electronic device that just picks up the information off of your easy pass. So you go through and click, click, and they got the information and they bill you. 55 miles an hour. But if you don't have an easy pass and you want to pay cash, you go into the slow lane and you wait online and you pay. Imagine if they had a third lane that said free, no speed limit. Who in their right mind would go through the easy pass lane or, especially, go and pay cash? I mean, why would you pay for something you can get for free? I would argue that anybody who would wait online when there's a free, no speed limit lane is demonstrating mental illness. That's what immigration has turned into. It's an insanity test. If you're willing to abide by the law, there must be something wrong with you. because this administration, aided and abetted by the Republican Party, has created a free-for-all on our border. I just read to you what the 9/11 Commission staff report said about border security and national security. And if, God forbid, this country ever gets attacked and you see those jackasses standing in front of the microphones jumping up and down, why didn't they connect the dots? Why didn't they connect the dots? Remember, everyone was screaming that as they stood in front of the microphones and pounded the podium and tried to look serious and tried to look outraged. They didn't connect the dots. Well, we've been connecting the dots. I've done 16 congressional hearings. Many other people have done many more hearings, and we keep telling them border security, immigration, these are critical issues. This is about national security. And if there's an attack, and if they don't cover it up in the media, how will they then stand there and say no one connected the dots? And you know what? There'll be enough dopey Americans saying, well, who could have known? Who could have known? But I'm going to let you in on something. May 20th, 1997, I was invited to testify before the House Subcommittee on Immigration and Border Security. Henry Hyde was the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee at the time. Lamar Smith was the chairman of the House Immigration Subcommittee at the time. The topic of the hearing was visa fraud and immigration benefit fraud, because everybody knew that the terrorists who attacked us not once but twice in 1993, first the Pakistani by the name of Kansi, who shot up the CIA January 93, entered the United States with a visa, made an application for political asylum and lied through his teeth, and the public record has been obfuscated as to whether or not he was ever granted asylum, but the bottom line was he had applied for asylum, lied through his teeth, and stood outside CIA headquarters with an AK-47. He had bought into a courier service, so he's driving around every day in Virginia in a courier truck, which is kind of like camouflage. It's like building a treehouse in a forest. And why was he driving that courier truck? To use as surveillance. Terrorists love to have jobs that give them mobility and camouflage, whether it's driving a van, an ice cream truck, courier truck, any kind of a delivery truck, a taxi cab, limo service. They're ubiquitous. We see them everywhere. We ignore them. We don't even pay attention. It gives them the ability. School bus drivers, right? And then we had that in Toronto, where a school bus driver was trying to recruit teenage boys in Canada into a terror ring. The bus gives them mobility. It gives them camouflage and so forth. And then a month later, first attack at the World Trade Center, and you heard the remarks about it, Mahmoud Abu Alim and the others. So you look at all this, we realize the way that they operated. So they held a hearing about visa fraud. And what was the finding in the 9/11 Commission report afterwards? We're too easy to give out visas. On September 11, 2001, there were 26 visa waiver countries. Over the years, including on George W.'s watch, it's both political parties, folks, we've steadily increased the number of visa waiver countries. Just about 2 months ago, Chile became the 38th visa waiver country. The 9/11 Commission said, we're making it too easy to give visas out. We have to tighten up. So what do? We add 12 visa waiver countries to the list. Does that make sense? No. But the Chamber of Commerce, I call them the Chamber of Horrors, partnered with the hotel and hospitality and manufacturing industries to create something known as the Discover America Partnership. Somebody needs to remind them that Al-Qaeda has already discovered America. So what's this all about? It's all about money. It's all about greed. And it's all about the cost of doing business when people die. Do they care that people die? Not in the least. Except maybe they lose a customer. That probably upsets them greatly. Oh, my God, we lost a customer. But then again, maybe the Chamber of Commerce has partnered with some undertakers, so you win some and you lose some. So the undertaker gets some more business. What the hell? It's a wash. If I sound cynical and angry, I am, because they don't care. And the super wealthy have better protection than Secret Service even offers. So they don't care. They don't have to worry about being stuck in a traffic jam because they have helicopters. They get on their own private jet airliner. They don't care. It's Leona Helmsley, if you remember her, the witch of the real estate industry, saying, well, the little people pay taxes. I don't. So why should she care? I'm above all that. I'm special. You are just not so special as me. That was her attitude. the tragedy of the commons, you see. And, you know, it's so remarkable because so-called liberals, people say, well, this is a conservative issue, it's a liberal issue. Barbara Jordan, you should look this up, folks, the Barbara Jordan Commission report on immigration, warned about illegal immigration. She was an African-American, very liberal member of Congress who saw the damage being done by illegal immigration, especially to America's minority communities, American black and Latino communities, suffering the highest poverty rates, the highest crime rates. And she said, we've got to stop bringing in foreign workers when you look at the damage it's doing to our own communities. She was a liberal. I'm a labor guy. My pop will always be my biggest hero. He was a plumber. He was a construction worker. This isn't about being conservative. It's about being pro-American. But nobody seems to get it. So for those of you that don't get it, think of the Chamber of Commerce. Think of the hell they put Ralph Nader through, the darling of the so-called liberal movement. He was the guy that started consumerism, which is one of the real big issues for the liberal ideology, and I'm a consumerist myself, within reason. We could have that conversation on another day. But, you know, he was concerned about the way that cars were being built and so forth, and we should be. We can't make the world completely safe, but when obvious fixes are there, they need to be done. I mean, think of what's going on with GM now, with the people who died, because of an ignition switch that would turn off the power and the car wouldn't steer properly and the airbags got turned off and then people crashed and there was no airbags and people were killed. So Ralph Nader was the guy that went out there beating the drum for consumers. It was the Chamber of Commerce that put him through hell. It's the Chamber of Commerce that's leading the charge to open up the borders. Why doesn't anyone understand? You want to connect the dots. You look at the Chamber of Commerce. You look at Ralph Nader, and you look at the immigration situation right now. You look at the visa waiver program. The people behind these issues don't give a rat's tail about Americans, especially American middle-class workers. This is about shoveling as much money as they can into the pockets of the billionaires. I mean, how reassuring is it to you folks that hotel executives are making essentially national security decisions? You're lucky if they can provide you with enough clean linen when you go on vacation, but they're the ones telling our government how to conduct national security. What could possibly go wrong? I know that those of you that listen to my program, and I love having you here, because I know you're dedicated finding out the information that you're not hearing anywhere else. I'm thrilled that The Blaze had me on. I'm thrilled that the One American News Network had me on earlier this week or last week. Next week I'll be on with Roger Hedgecock. So if the major networks don't want to cover the stories the way they should, there are alternatives because people are waking up and saying, you know what, we really aren't being given the information. Fox News has me on, absolutely. Not as often as I would like, not as often as they used to, but they do. MSNBC, I had been on that program gazillions of times. They won't even talk about it. CNN, same story, because the agenda is one of globalism. It's one of globalism. So the trick here is don't talk about it, don't ask, don't tell, and maybe people will forget how dangerous this game is because too many people are getting too rich. You know, it's kind of like, I'm sure I'm really dating myself when I say this, but there was a wonderful program that was on when I was a kid called You Bet Your Life with Groucho Marx. And if you want to have a good chuckle, Google it. Groucho Marx. I actually met Harpo Marx when I was a kid. Very nice man. He gave me an autograph. Unfortunately, over the years, I managed to lose it. But Groucho had a program called You Bet Your Life. The Chamber of Commerce and our alleged political leaders are betting our lives. And if they win, they stand to make an awful lot of money. And we stand to lose our lives. And I would submit to you folks that they don't care. Oh, I'm sure they'll say, gee, isn't it too bad? As they get into their Rolls Royce or their Ferrari or their Maserati, drive out to the airport and hop into their Gulfstream 5. No Learjet for that crowd. I mean, this is what we're up against, folks. The one advantage we have is that we have 300 million Americans, and those of us who can vote need to become involved in the process. The fewer Americans who are involved in the process, the easier it is for a small group of voters to control what happens in Congress. Safety in numbers, power in numbers. The one trump card that we still have is that we can vote and we are numerous. But we need to be educated and we need to be involved. And that's why I always make the point that democracy is not a spectator sport. I love doing this program because it gives me an opportunity to provide you with information that I know you're not getting in too many other places. I'm honored that General Paul Vallely has become a regular on this program. I believe today was the fourth time that he's been kind enough to spend some time with us. I will do everything in my power, folks, to provide you with the insight, with the information, with the perspectives that you're not going to hear anywhere else. But I want you to do something. I want you to use the information to make the politicians accountable. I want you to take the information that you see here and pass it to your friends. Tell them about capsweb.org. Tell them about michaelcutler.net. Tell them about the podcasts. Let them listen. I'm not going to tell you I have all the answers. Tell you that most of the programs out there will offer you none of the answers. And that's not good. We live in a perilous era. We live in a perilous era. We are being threatened by transnational criminals, international terrorists. Heroin is, in epidemic proportions. They've just given the New York City Police Department the antidote for heroin overdoses. 20,000 cops, more than half the New York City Police Department, is now walking around with the antidote to heroin overdoses in case they encounter it. This is costing millions of dollars. You think they're doing it for the fun of it? They're doing it because we've never seen so much heroin pouring onto the streets of our towns and cities. It endangers public health, it endangers public safety, and it's directly linked to crime. Instead of worrying how many bullets law-abiding, authorized firearms-carrying citizens can carry, why is nobody concerned about how much heroin is out on the street or how much cocaine? Because we know that it's the sale of drugs that's behind so much of the crime, directly and indirectly, so much of the violence, so many of the problems, societal problems, evolve out of drug use. Our borders are supposed to prevent the entry of narcotics. We do not produce a single gram of heroin or cocaine domestically. Every gram of those poisons present in the United States was smuggled across our borders. It's that simple. That's the measure of border security, not those phony arrest statistics. And they arrest statistics. What are they going to talk about now? How many kids, are staying where with babysitters provided by the Border Patrol? There is no border. They've erased it. They've erased it. So if you really want to know how bad it is, look at how much heroin is out there. Look at all the crime that it leads to. Look at all the problems that it leads to. We have a dysfunctional, immoral government where apparently all that matters are campaign contributions and ideology and the hell with the average American. And it's both parties. It's both political parties that are letting down the people of this country. And it's particularly sad to have to contemplate that even as we commemorate the 70th anniversary of D-Day, Operation Overlord, the brilliant work of General Eisenhower and other generals of this country and our allies who pulled off an audacious attack. And it's remarkable because earlier today they were talking about how Eisenhower, even before they launched the attack, wrote a letter taking full responsibility, anticipating what he would have to say if they failed. Just like Harry Truman, the idea that the buck stops here. When was the last time you saw a politician stand before the cameras and say, it's my fault, mea culpa, I did it, I screwed up? No, it becomes a finger-pointing contest. He did it, she did it, I didn't know, they didn't tell me, I would have done differently. What difference does it make? The average worker couldn't pull this nonsense off if they were flipping hamburgers at McDonald's. and yet the leaders of our country do this routinely, and we've come to expect it, a lack of accountability, because we, the people, are not making them accountable. This isn't partisanship, folks. This is about being a pro-American. The only people who lost their job on September 11, 2001 are the people who died. That's not acceptable. That's not acceptable. I participated in a hearing 4.5 years before 9/11, and if the Clinton administration had taken to heart the issues of visa fraud, benefit fraud, those vulnerabilities that enabled the attacks of 93, both of them, to take place, and if they had acted accordingly, in my judgment, 9/11 could not have happened. Could not have happened. It happened because the Clinton administration put the agenda of open borders and commerce ahead of national security and public safety. It was a betrayal of America and Americans. They made a big deal about Monica. I make a bigger deal about what wasn't done to protect us after those two attacks. Anyway, we're at the bottom of the show, bottom of the hour. I want to thank all of you, as always, for joining me at the end of the week. It's always a delight to be here with you. It's always a good way for me to end the week visiting with you. I hope you find the information that I provide on this program useful to you. And if so, please let your friends and neighbors know about the Michael Cutler Hour. Let them know about capsweb.org. Certainly, I want you to let them know about the great work that CAPS does and other people out there who are trying to keep you informed at a time when it's increasingly difficult to get the truth out there. This is one of the problems that we're really facing right now in this country. So the final point that I will make to you is that there are primaries coming up, by the way, folks. What I want you to do is give serious thought to participating in the primaries. Please make certain to vote. You've got to go out there. It's like they say about the lottery, you know, you got to be in it to win it. So again, I ask you to go vote, to please do the best you can as citizens of this great country, and please stay on top of the issues. Do what you can to inform your neighbors. Do what you can to convince the politicians that we are truly not as dumb as they hoped we are. Democracy is not a spectator sport, folks. I wish all of you a great weekend, and I look forward to joining you again next week at the same time here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Have a great weekend, everybody. See you next week.
The problem is that the way Bush has done it over... The problem is that the way Bush has done it over the last 8 years is to take out a credit card from the Bank of China in the name of our children